From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up at Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Before he was El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, Malcolm X was Malcolm Little, a black youth in 1940s America, sentenced to years in prison as a young man and precursor to the revolutionary he became. Malcolm read books, befriended other prisoners, and reflected deeply on his life. Those formative years are captured in a fictionalized book called The Awakening of Malcolm X, aimed at young readers and written by his daughter, Ilyasa Shabazz. Ilyasa Shabazz is the third daughter of Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz. She's an educator, activist, motivational speaker, and author of multiple award-winning publications, including Betty Before X and X a Novel. She's also an active advocacy worker and an adjunct professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. She now joins me to discuss her new book, co-authored with Tiffany D. Jackson, The Awakening of Malcolm X. Welcome to the program, Ilyasa.
Hello, thank you. It's such an honor to be here with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So what were the years of your father's life that this book captures? You know, many of us who've heard his speeches, who've, you know, seen the films and the film depictions know of his adult life, but you capture his young years.
That's right. You know, well, I think most people don't even realize that Malcolm was only in his 20s when the world learned of him. It was during a time when young people were marching, demonstrating, protesting for quality education, quality lifestyle, respect for human life. And my father came along and said, "We demand our human rights as your brother. We demand our human rights ordained by God." And so just as a young man in his 20s, he provided the biggest critique of America, and he insisted that America live up to her promise of liberty and justice for all.
So he was sentenced to, I understand, 10 years in prison. What was he sentenced for?
He was sentenced for robbery, and he was, I think, 20 years old, and he had a girlfriend, and, you know, it was a bunch of these young people, and he and his buddy had, you know, they were dating two white young women, and they, you know, unfortunately did some robbery, and when they were convicted, their sentence was pretty exorbitant.
And right there, you start your book, and in a few minutes, I'd like to ask you to read a section from it, with the encounter that the young Malcolm had with the criminal justice system in America, and in particular, the deeply racist aspect of the criminal justice system that has basically always been rigged, especially against young black men, right? And so you start your book there in a courtroom, in a way.
That's right. And you know, what I often tell young people is Malcolm did not go to jail and miraculously exit as Malcolm X. When he went to jail, he was in a state of confusion. It was the height of Jim Crow. You know, young black people, and in this instance, a young black man who was called a Negro, they were questioning their identity. They had no idea who they were. And, you know, I say that after Malcolm's father was lynched, who was, you know, a Baptist minister, he was the president of an organization that commanded millions of followers in the 1920s. His mother was the national recording secretary for this organization, Marcus Garvey Movement, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and so his two young parents instilled specific values in young Malcolm. The value of literary, of education, the values of compassion, and so forth, and Malcolm and his siblings. And so when his father was lynched, several years later, his mother was put in an institution. His father actually had purchased land that was then reserved for whites only. And so after they lynched his dad, they put his mother in an institution, they broke up their family, they seized the land. And to this day, the land is owned by, or the name on the deed is the judge that was involved in these cases. And so, you know, it's just a challenging time for a young man who's basically told that his life means nothing. In school, he wanted to be a lawyer. These were the values that were instilled in him as a child with his parents and his family intact. And when his favorite teacher said, no, Malcolm, you know, you have to think more realistically as a Negro, but he used a different word, you know, that had to have been quite crushing with no one there to comfort, console him, to encourage him. And you know, it speaks to the smart, forward-thinking adults to encourage young people when they find themselves at a crossroads.
Can you read a section from your book, which I should again mention is aimed at young adults, so young people to learn about the youth of Malcolm X? Give us a sense of a little taste, if you will, of your book, The Awakening of Malcolm X.
Yes. The streets of Lansing were empty, as they should have been for the late hour, but the backdrop of snow-capped mountains were glistening under a star-filled sky. The ground was wet with mud. A streetcar bell rang in the distance. I turned quickly to the sound of someone standing next to me. Papa? I gasped. There he was, in his dark, double-breasted coat, hat, round spectacles. His cold, dark, flawless skin shined in the moonlight. It had been so long, I wasn't sure if I would remember his face, but it was him. I knew it in my bones. Papa didn't say a word, his eyes steady on me, full of wonder, like he didn't recognize me. Papa, it's me, Malcolm, I've whispered. He looked me over as if he were inspecting a property he never meant to purchase. I had disappointed him. I'm sorry, Papa. We stood under the stars of which our people were made. Without a word, he turned, and then the mob swarmed around him, barking slurs. They began slowly walking ahead toward the streetcar tracks. Papa? Papa, what's going on? What are they doing? One hit him on the head with a metal pipe. His hat tumbled in the wind. The streetcar bells jingled, closer than before. They were forcing him onto the tracks. I yelled, but no sound came out. I shut my eyes. Don't make me watch this. Please don't make me watch this, I begged. They wrestled him onto the tracks and I tied him down. I tried to scream again, but nothing came out. I heard Mom's voice, Hilda's voice, Reginald's voice. Remember who you are. Remember who you are. It's what Papa would have wanted. Up, up, you mighty race. It's time to wake up, Malcolm. I fell to my knees, covered my ears, and waited for the streetcar to pass, crushing his giant body as they watched in delight. The silence came fast, and I find myself once again on a cell floor, sobbing tears from my chest. Tears and sweat roll down my face, splashing on the floor like a rainstorm. I climb to my feet and jog in place, kicking up my knees higher and higher as the darkness of my cell creeps in closer. I have no idea how long it is until sunrise, but I can't keep again. I can't sleep. I can't face Papa again. He's seen all I've done. He's watched me plummet away from everything he taught me. He saw me steal, lie, fornicate, drink, smoke, snort, eat swine. He saw me pretend I couldn't read, and worse, deny Marcus Garvey's call. Up, up, you mighty race. And yet he loved me. My brothers, Wilfred, Filbert, Reginald, Wesley, Robert, they love me. How can anyone love someone like me? I swing at the air like Joe Louis. Sophia's piercing laugh floods my ears. Then there are the big bands on stage with forced smiles, Billie Holiday's wailing melodies, empty souls clinking glasses, young black prostitutes looking for someone to love them. They paying cheers of Jackie Robinson stealing bass, cell doors closing one after the other, panic-stricken young men in the hole, weeping for mercy. Mom, alone with no one to protect her. Railroad tracks, clang, 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 up, up, you mighty race. Stop, I yell into the silent world. Slowly through the silence, Papa's speeches begin to play in my head, full of static, like the old radio in the living room. And I remember every word, every single word. I remember being a little boy watching my papa at the pulpit. I remember it all. My chest heaves, the blackness in my cell easing, but the anger is still heavy inside me. I need something to expend it upon. Hours pass until sunlight hits my window. In desperation, I write to the only person that may understand. It's a shot in the dark, but it's the only shot I have left to take. The return letter comes in a cream-colored envelope, typed in black ink, addressed to me, Mr. Malcolm Little. Neat and perfect, like I'm worthy of something good.
Ilyasa Shabazz is my guest, reading from her new book in her father Malcolm X's voice, who in turn was reflecting in this book on his father. The book is called The Awakening of Malcolm X, and it is aimed at young adults and covers Malcolm X's early years. Ilyasa, tell me about this, the importance of embedding your father's ideas and thoughts in his father, in the generations that came before, in that historical framework.
Well, you know, first I want to say that the U.S. spends $80 billion, $80 billion taxpayer dollars on correctional facilities. And, you know, not education, because we know a lot of young people are in debt for their college education, but not on education, not on after-school programs. And that in 2012, the incarcerated population of Black and brown people has increased 700%. And, you know, these are the kinds of injustices that are happening to our young people. I think it's extremely important that we find alternatives. Bryan Stevenson, someone that I admire tremendously with his Equal Justice Initiative attorney, he says that we are more than the worst mistake we've ever made, and that a society will not be judged on how we treat the rich and the celebrated, but by how we treat the marginalized, the underserved, and the incarcerated. And you know, so these kinds of things are happening to our young people, and I think that it is certainly time that we smart, forward-thinking adults, look to criminal reform, criminal justice reform.
Right. And I definitely do want to talk more about that aspect of it. But just to turn back to the book and the section that you were reading, how much of your father, Malcolm X's experiences of his own youth and the things that he saw of America, combined with what he read in prison, helped to, you know, push that transformation into the fierce activist for change that he became?
Well, you know, again, he did provide the biggest critique of America, and again insisted that America lives up to her promise of liberty and justice for all. All of the things that were happening in the 1950s, 40s, 30s, in the late 1800s, all of these things continue. And, you know, the greatest thing is that my father said that it would be this young generation that would recognize that those in power have misused it and demand change, and that they would be willing to roll up their sleeves to do the necessary work. One of the, something I was really proud of, especially with our young people, over the summer when Tiffany D. Jackson and I finished writing this book, we discovered that my father was quoted in social media 53.7 thousand times per hour per day.
Wow.
And this, yeah, that's what we said. And, you know, it's the clearest evidence that young people are attracted to truth. And we know that Malcolm spoke truth, and truth is timeless, and that they look to those who can provide strategies and tactics that they can employ to address these challenges head on. They want to learn about what it is that happened in history. They want to understand. They are intuitive and they are ready. And so, you know, like my father said, that it would be this young generation that would spark such inspiration in all of us. And we saw that even this past summer while we were all self-isolating, not understanding what this pandemic was, if we were going to live or not, right? Questioning our mortality, only forced to watch an officer just horrifically take the life of an innocent man. And all of these people went to the streets proclaiming that Black life matters in 50 states and in this country and 18 countries abroad. And so that is really, you know, remarkable that we are understanding our humanity, that we are indeed a reflection of one another. And it speaks to the importance of this self-love, this thing that my father often spoke of, understanding the necessity to provide our young people with a quality education.
In chapter 4 of your book, and you start each chapter with a quote from Malcolm X, the one that opens chapter 4 is a quote saying, "We can never get civil rights in America until our human rights are first restored. We will never be recognized as citizens there until we are first recognized as humans." That chapter goes on to focus, interestingly enough, about Jackie Robinson, who is a big historical figure in the city that I live in Pasadena, California. Tell me about why Jackie Robinson's athleticism and national stature was a pivotal moment, why that was an aspect that you cover in your book aimed at young people about Malcolm X.
Yeah, well, it was a historical moment, and it was also an opportunity to show what segregation looked like, what integration looked like, what, you know, understanding one another's contributions. For example, I think it's important that we look at our education curriculum and make sure that we are teaching our children truth, right? That African-American history, for example, is American history. And if the subsequent massacres of Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Rosewood, Florida, are taught in high school U.S. history classes to be as American as the Boston Tea Party, then we would know that our education is based on historical truth, and more citizens would understand the necessity for reparation. We would have the opportunity to ensure we're instilling a value system of truth, honesty, and human compassion. And if in world history classes, the truth that Africa is the cradle of the most advanced civilization ever to exist in mankind, and the impressive empires of Mali, Egypt, Benin, Ghana, got half the attention that ancient Rome and Greece do, then we would appreciate the present complexity of Black civilizations in Africa and the rest of the world without teaching our children hate and discrimination. Rather, we are encouraging in them love and respect for self first, and then love and respect for humanity, and recognizing that we absolutely are a reflection of one another. So I think this is the importance of participating in this narrative of our education curriculum.
Is that why you thought it was important to aim a book at young people? You know, Malcolm X can seem like such a larger-than-life figure, but from reading your book, one of the things that jumped out at me was a sort of reminder that he was a person, and he, you know, as a young person, he sort of enjoyed, or, you know, some of the same things that young people do, or made some of the same mistakes that young people do. And that if Malcolm X could go on to become such an influential figure in American history, there are young people, especially young people of color, especially young African Americans today, that could take that inspiration.
That's right. That's right. And again, I think it all starts with our education curriculum, that we just have to make sure that their curriculum is based on historical facts. I think that's extremely important, that every person should be able to see some kind of inspiration in our educational textbooks.
How did you go about piecing together the story that you tell of your father? I'm wondering if you can give me a sense of, you created a fictionalized narrative to bring to life those years of his youth. Did you just sift through letters? I imagine talked to your own family members about what those years were like?
That's right. For as long as I can remember, I was just always so inquisitive about my father. And my aunt, my father's eldest sister, Hilda, she actually had shared so many stories with me. When I was in college, I was had the opportunity of going to Boston and spending time with her and discovering that the reason that she moved to Boston in the first place was to be with her brother when her brother was in jail, and she wanted him to know that his family was there for him. And that's something that I just found so wonderful. And even when my father got married, he loved Harlem. He loved New York. He met his wife in New York, but when he got married, he brought her back to Michigan and married her there. So it shows that my father's family life was so important to him.
And the
Also
letter, by the
learning.
way, that there's a letter from your aunt Hilda to Malcolm in your book. Was that based on a real letter?
Yes, of course. Based on real letters, based on real correspondence.
So let me finally ask you to put into context this particular history that you write in the pantheon of books that are available about Malcolm X. I mean, of course, there's the biography of Malcolm X that Alex Haley wrote. There's movies, there's so much out there. Where do you think your book fits in all of those stories that have been told about Malcolm X? I mean, you're his daughter, you have the firsthand account of him. I think more than any other living person, short of your own siblings.
I'm glad you said that, short of my own siblings, because I do have five sisters. And I always make sure that I acknowledge that my father and mother had both six daughters. I think it's just important to put my father into context, into proper context, that it is important to understand that his parents instilled these specific values that enabled Malcolm to become Malcolm X. And it speaks to the importance of that family, right? It speaks to the importance of the village to raise a child, that Malcolm didn't go to jail and just miraculously become Malcolm X, that it took value system and support from his family, from his parents. And I'm just going on blanks right now.
That's okay.
Hope I said enough for you.
That's fine. And I'm wondering if there's just a nice way to wrap up the conversation just very briefly. It seems as though it was important in your book for you to show Malcolm searching for himself. There's this really beautiful section in the middle of your book, where in his first person he says, "I'm not sure who I am anymore, and it scares me. I became many Malcolms to survive." And I'm wondering if you can explain the importance of that, getting inside Malcolm X's mind and showing him struggling and lost, because many of us do find ourselves in those positions.
Well, I think our identity is extremely important. And, I have to take my hat off to my mother. One thing that she made sure of, she raised her six daughters in a bubble. And, we were raised around so much love, an overabundance of love. She made sure that we learned about the significant contributions that the African diaspora, indigenous people, first world nations made to this world. We learned about the significant contributions that Islam made to this world. And we learned about the significant contributions that women made to the world. My mother made sure that we grew up loving ourselves so much so that when we would go out into, the world on our own, when I went to college, I certainly was not the person that people expected me to be as Malcolm X's daughter. And what I discovered is that they had been misinformed about who Malcolm was. Malcolm was love, Malcolm was kindness, Malcolm was joy, Malcolm was peace. And he wanted every person to have the opportunity to know that they were worthy. I think that every child deserves the opportunity to know that they're worthy of love, worthy of a quality education, and worthy to participate in mainstream society just as they've been created.
Well, Ilyasa Shahbaz, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck to you with your book, and thanks for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Ilyasa Shahbaz. She's the third daughter of Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shahbaz. She's an educator, activist, motivational speaker, and author of multiple award-winning publications. She's also an adjunct professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. We've been discussing her new book, co-authored with Tiffany D. Jackson, which is a young adult fictionalized biography of her father's early years called The Awakening of Malcolm X. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.